Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
Here we are once again on Monday night. It's the Hour of Truth. We're in the Article 5 show. I'm Dave, your host. We want to thank Missouri Grassroots Coalition for the time that they've given us every Monday night. You can catch a Missouri Grassroots Coalition radio show, blog talk radio show on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday. We have shows being lined up now for Thursday and Friday, which will put us on every night of the week. Wow, it's been a week in the news, hasn't it? You saw the little thing today, I suppose, on the food stamps. Somehow or another, in 11 states, a glitch in the food stamp system showed people with unlimited money in their food stamp account, and they rushed the stores, tearing the grocery stores apart, stocking up on food for the upcoming crash, and wiped out several large stores. People, of course, spending a lot more than they are, quote unquote, entitled to. A thought occurred to me a little while ago, and you know, you and I, us poor working Americans who don't use food stamps, who actually go and pay cash for things when we buy them. You know, if the government sends us a duplicate income tax refund or a duplicate Social Security check, anything like that, as soon as they realize what they've done, they reach into our bank account and take it out, or they withhold, if they can't do that, withhold our next payments until such time as we're caught up. I wonder if next week we're going to find out that they did nothing to recover this $100 million or so that they gave away over the weekend. I'm sure this was all a result of the government shutdown. It's designed to hurt middle class and otherwise quote-unquote conservative Americans, and I'm sure that something had to be done to reciprocate those folks who were being unfairly hurt by the 19% of the government that is shut down. Pretty amazing. But also, moving on in the news, this morning I heard on the radio, and again, this isn't exact words. I've got them written down somewhere, but it doesn't matter. But the thing is that after a late week rally of last week, the Dow this morning, at about 10 o'clock our time here in Missouri, was reported on the news, and this is Fox News, by the way. I'm sure that it was even more astounding to hear it on something like NBC, CBS, CSNBC, CNN, CWKRJMNOP, where the White House actually calls the shots. But after a late week rally on the stock market, this morning's opening was finally starting to show a reaction to the government shutdown. The Dow at 10 o'clock this morning was down, I want to say, 69 points. Now, in the first place, 69 points movement on the Dow is a smidgen, one way or the other. It's basically the same as closing or opening or being dead even, 69 points. But further and more importantly, just as an example of the way the press is running things here, 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, 10 weeks ago, a year ago, after a late week rally, a Monday morning decline of 67 points or 600 points, well, no, of 167 points would be called profit taking. People who are day trading, taking advantage of the upswing on Thursday and Friday, cashing in for their profits on Monday and Tuesday. That's the way that that system works, and that's exactly what it would have been called. But now it is a reaction to the looming fiscal crisis. I wonder if closing, in fact, up 87 points today wasn't a reaction to the fact that Congress is still deadlocked at close of business. I don't think so, but I don't think the other way around either. The president continues to be frustrated by the fact that the markets won't crash on his promise to default on American interest payments. We had an interesting story on tonight's news about how if the government doesn't get a debt extension, they will miss out on paying probably $6 billion in interest on the loans before the end of the year, by the end of the year, and about $68 billion by the end of the year in Social Security payments. Now listen, I said $6 billion by the end of the year in loan interest payments, and $68 billion by the end of the year in Social Security payments. A federal government that has, without borrowing a dime, a net inflow of revenue of $200 billion a month. That's the money they take out of your paycheck. That's the money they take out of my paycheck. That's the money that lands in Washington, D.C., $200 billion a month. And they're threatening, unconstitutionally, clearly, to not pay the interest on the debt, $6 billion, and Social Security, $68 billion, on, this is what, October? On $450 billion that they will take in between now and the end of the year. Amazing. There will be no default, brothers and sisters. We want to say this every time we talk to you. There will be no default from a government that has a revenue stream of $200 billion a month, unless there's something that I don't understand. If one of you out there is an economist or a financier and understands how a government taking in $200 billion a month with a constitutional mandate to pay above and beyond all else to service the debt cannot pay $6 billion in interest payments by the end of the year. Here's another thing that I need to hear from someone who knows a lot more than me about economics and marketing and finance. The principle involved in insurance is this. An insurance company collects these premiums. You pay them every month. They put the money in the bank. They make a little interest on it. And they then insure themselves against future risk. So State Farm collects all these premiums and they put them in the bank and they make interest on it and they build up this super fund for when a tornado comes ripping through Joplin, Missouri. Excuse me. Fall kind of gets me down with this hacky throat. But now, one of the key components of Obamacare is that in real time, 80% of all the revenue that the insurance company makes has to be paid in benefits. And any excess in that 80% has to be returned to policyholders. Now, I want to know, in a system like that, where's the money in the bank the next time a flu pandemic hits? Or worse, you know, when a nuclear bomb goes off in New York City or any number of disasters that could cause financial strain to the health insurance industry. Where's the money in the bank? I mean, this has completely destroyed what health insurance or any kind of insurance is all about. You pay people money They save the money. They invest the money. They make money on the money. They build up a super fund for when you get cancer and it costs you $285,000 to die. Now, where's the $285,000 that it's going to cost me to die coming from if 80% of the premium I pay has to be paid out this month in medical benefits or returned to me? I don't get it. So somebody that does, let us know how this is going to work. Okay, we're going to take a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about tonight's topic in the Article 5 show, and that is term limits. Now, term limits is a pretty sensitive topic. I'll tell you right now before we start, I am a recent convert to the idea of term limits. I've been opposed to term limits all my life. One of my good friends, when I put out the call to listen tonight, answered and right away and said, we do have term limits. It's called the ballot box. And that's where I was until recently. And we're going to go into that. And then we're going to put out the call for you folks once more to get off your hinies and write your legislators, and I mean, if you've already done it, great, do it again. Do it again over and over again. The legislative session starts here in another couple of months, and we'd like to see this item, this Article 5 item, moving the next time they meet.
The emergency
disruption system is now activated. No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
So you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
I've got a feeling that the night is
so dear, for peace so sweet, as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners, show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the household, then we start making better investments.
You wrote the book with a movie in mind.
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
All right. Listen, we're back now, and we're going to talk in just a minute about the subject tonight. I want to get in a plug, first of all, back to that promo. Missouri Grassroots Coalition, as I say every time, I beg you folks, is an entity that collects no money, no dues, no calls, no appeals for money for anything all year long except one thing, and that is the MGC Secret Santa. We're way behind this year in the Secret Santa. We need your help. It's been kind of a mainstay of MGC for the last several years. This Secret Santa, it's been a real blessing to several people throughout the state of Missouri, as many as you've allowed us to afford it. Every dime that's sent in goes directly to the Secret Santa Project, and we collect for it all year long, not just at the end of the year, because as time gets closer, it's going to become harder and harder and harder for us to beg you for money or for you to give money as the holidays close in on you too. So today, while you're listening, go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, click on the Secret Santa button at the top, and use PayPal to send in whatever you can afford. I'm telling you, we're way behind this year, and we'll be carrying off a very limited Secret Santa, if any at all, if we don't get some movement on this. And so... I mean, we're just asking for a very simple thing. Just go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check on the Secret Santa button, and use PayPal to send a couple of bucks to us, please. All right. A long, long time ago, once upon a time, some wise people got together and came up with a document to guide an entire nation of liberty-loving people. And the wisest of these knew that that as time went on, the central government would start amassing power unto itself, and that once it reached a certain point, that government would be virtually unstoppable. And so they included an escape hatch in the Constitution, and it was Article 5. And it basically said – not basically, it exactly says that – any time that two-thirds of the states demand of the federal government a meeting of the states to propose amendments to the Constitution, that meeting would occur, and that meeting would happen, and out of that meeting could come proposed amendments to the Constitution, having nothing to do with the legislature. The legislature has no veto power or amendment power to what's proposed. They're not involved at all. The executive has no veto power. Out of the states themselves come proposed amendments. And that those amendments, just like any amendment proposed by Congress, which is the way we've done all of the amendments we've had so far, would then go out to the various 50 states, and if three-fourths of the states accepted the amendment, that amendment would become part of the Constitution of the United States. you're not going to get, I mean, if your intent with amending the Constitution is to bring the federal government under control, to basically knock down the federal government back to where it belongs, to somehow limit and restrict once again the power of this monster, you are not going to get the kind of amendments you need out of Washington, D.C. The legislature can, of course, propose amendments that it would then send out to the states. That's the way every amendment that's happened so far has occurred. And then if three-fourths of the states bought on to that, it would become a part of the Constitution. You're not going to get the kind of amendments you need out of this government. Whether it's run by conservatives or liberals, the idea, the mission of your government is to maintain its power and amass more power. Power is what Obamacare is all about. Power is what the debt is all about. Power is what the entitlement programs that you see in place now are all about. Not a thing about any entitlement program that is in place today is about helping people or feeding people or clothing people or doing your Christian duty. Everything that this federal government does now, from regulating light bulbs and dam building to governing what kind of medical care you are entitled to, is about power. And no government so drunk on power is going to do anything to alleviate itself of power. Further, and as we've talked about many times before, the government is being aided and abetted in this grasp for power by the Supreme Court of the United States. The recent ruling on Arizona's immigration policies, the recent ruling on Obamacare, almost every recent court ruling has been about granting the federal government more power. And we went through this, back from the beginning, we followed the Supreme Court decisions in an earlier show that got us to this point, that actually tipped the scales to the point where you actually now have a federal court system that has convinced itself that the intent of the Constitution was federal law trumps state law in almost everything. Nothing could be further from the intent of the Constitution. And that's clear to anyone who understands the fear that the founders had of centralized government. I was telling someone again today, and we actually had a series of shows on this some time ago, but you cannot ferret out, as courts today try to do, and as lawmakers today try to do, and as even scholarly people and not so scholarly people today try to do, the intent of the Constitution by looking at it backwards through the history, through the dark, murky history that has basically amended the Constitution with every court decision, that has basically amended the Constitution with every new legislature, with every new executive, until we reach a point where we have an executive committee now that just makes up law out of thin air as though it were the lawmaking body. We have a legislature that has reneged on its obligation to be the body of declaration of war, for example. And we've reached a point where we have a Supreme Court that aids and abets, just as though it were a kind of a tag-along administrative branch in the amassing of power. And in doing so, amasses power even unto itself. you're not going to get any fixes. Now, one of the things that we've talked about in the past was doing something about this lifelong term of Supreme Court justices. And so tonight we're going to take on the legislature. You know, the American people, through a legislature that was healthily, that was working kind of in the way that the founders intended with this oppositional forces up here. The legislature took care at one time when it saw the president amassing too much power of term limits on the presidency. There was kind of a unwritten understanding when George Washington stepped down after two, that two was going to be it until along came Roosevelt. And that's when the legislature said, well, okay, this unwritten rule is going to need to become a written rule. And they proposed an amendment to limit the number of terms that a president could have and sent that out. And sure enough, three-fourths of the states agreed to it. Now we need an amendment that limits the terms of legislators. Some states have tried in the past, at the state level, to limit the terms of their legislators in Washington, D.C., and that didn't work out too well for them. And the question was finally decided, and I put that in air quotes too, finally decided, in 1995 when the U.S. Supreme Court declared it unconstitutional of a state to limit the terms of federal officials, as though federal officials were somehow above the will of the people who hire them, as though once they become federal officials, they are in a realm somewhere above the very people that they serve. And so the best way and the only way to beat that at this point is a constitutional amendment. Now, a constitutional amendment would, of course, do away with that Supreme Court ruling because it would no longer be unconstitutional. It would be entirely constitutional. And I, as I said earlier, am a recent convert to this idea of term limits. I have no ideas what the limits ought to be. I throw that out there for discussion. I have no idea how that should be split up, like when a Todd Akin who or a Roy Blunt who jumps from the House of Representatives to the Senate, and spends some time in each house. These are things that could be worked out by the states at the Constitutional Amendment Convention, and should be. But one of the things that we need to be thinking about as we approach this Constitutional Amendment Convention is term limits. It's gotten really out of hand. I was with my friend Tom until recently with the, you know, I don't want term limits. I considered it anti-liberty to have term limits. I've done some reading on it recently as I was going through a conversion experience. And I'm not suggesting that everything that everyone in the past has ever said is right or that it's right now because I agree with them. I didn't even know these opinions existed until I started studying up on this. But both Thomas Jefferson and Colonel Mason, two outstanding and outspoken voices at the Constitutional Convention. In fact, Colonel Charles Mason is the one who gave us Article 5 as it stands today. Were in favor of term limits. George Washington was in favor of term limits, and they all thought the Constitution somehow incomplete because it didn't limit terms. However, in those days, people didn't consider a job in Washington, D.C. as a job anyway. They considered it as a civic duty. It didn't pay well. Almost all of them had other jobs, kept their own workings going at home. You know, the fact of the matter is that work in Washington, D.C. now is so, I want to say it's hard because it certainly isn't, is so well, anyway, we're in a position today where legislators in D.C. can't keep their other jobs, can't maintain their pre-politics offices. And you have people who have gone to Washington, D.C. and have stayed there for all their life. Byrd is an example that comes to mind, was not an ex-member of the United States Senate until he was slobbering all over himself and couldn't coherently string five words together. Not that he was much better than that when he was a young feller. But it's time, in my mind, for us to return by force to a time when being a legislator, being a representative of the people in Washington, D.C., is something that you do for a little while, and then you go back to work. You get several benefits from this. One, you don't get the entrenched policy. You know, do you know when a congressman gets to Washington, a freshman congressman arrives in Washington, D.C. the first day, he is greeted in his office by his new staff of five, selected by the Speaker of the House's office, not hired, interviewed by the legislator himself, not chosen for any ideological compatibility, appointed to him and or her, and one of those people takes the legislator aside before the end of the first day and says, okay, I'm in charge of your reelection. What? Before the first day of business, I'm in charge of your reelection? Here's what we're going to do. You know, we're gonna do this, we're going to do that. Getting you reelected is the most important thing from this point forward, and here's how we're going to approach that. And as they talk about how they're going to approach that, they are rolling in everything from how this legislator is going to vote, how he's going to conduct himself or herself. It's just amazing. It just is amazing. The downside of this is exactly what we just said too. Your biggest argument that you're going to hear is that at the point in time where the legislature is forced to turn over every 10 to 12 years, and that might be too long, it's going to be run entirely by now these non-elected bureaucrats, these legislative assistants, these legislative staffs that hang around for lifetimes up there. And that's a danger. That's a danger that has to be guarded against. I mean, and we could do that. We could do that legislatively. We could force legislators to hire their own staff. We could do away with the, I mean, we should be thinking about doing, and we could do that legislatively, but we should be thinking about doing away as well with the long-term staffers, with the staffers who go up there and spend a lifetime staffing. You know, you don't need a lot of government experience to be a legislator. A lot of government experience is probably a bad thing. You know, serving the people, it's no different, honestly, than being a PTA president. I mean, you say, okay, I'll do this. I'll serve you for a time. And, I don't need a lot of experience to do it. I'm simply representing the people of the PTA. I'm simply guiding or shepherding some function here. It should be the same. It should be exactly the same. You know, you go up there and you make laws that are necessary and only laws that are necessary to carry out the constitutional functions of the United States federal government. And that's all there is to it. Some crazy freshman legislator this year had the audacity to make a suggestion that, you know, that it's that with all this current technology that we have, I mean, we have meetings between, you know, company department heads and company CEOs of a world-sized corporation, where one guy's sitting in Tokyo and one guy's sitting in Beijing and one guy's sitting in New York City. We have those kind of meetings every day. Some crazy freshman idiot had the audacity to suggest that maybe the Congress could meet in that way. Well, what's wrong with that? I mean, we're getting a little bit away from term limits here, but really, all that experience isn't necessary. All that expertise in making a decision about whether or not Americans should be forced to use curly light bulbs instead of round light bulbs, isn't that necessary? I say it's time. It's way past time for us to think about, as one of the amendments proposed by the Article 5 Amendment Convention, being term limits for United States senators and United States representatives. I wouldn't suggest myself, I mean, just thinking out loud here, that the same 8 years that the president gets would be enough. If you're going to make it 8 years, you could make it 8 and 12. You could make it 8 and 12 or because it's 6 years in the Senate, two terms, you could make it. I don't know. I really don't know. We could think about that. And that's one of the things that could be discussed when the states get together and meet. The beauty of this is that it's within our power to do so. The Supreme Court doesn't own us. The legislative branch doesn't own us. The executive branch doesn't own us. The entire weight of the three branches don't own us. We, the states and the people, we own them. And the Founding Fathers gave us a way to make sure that we maintain that ownership. We're going to have a break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about what we need to do to make that happen.
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. And good does not always triumph. sometimes the dark side overcomes what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for grass fire alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice, combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
If you, who make less than $250,000 a year, which includes 98% of small business owners, you will not see your taxes increase one single dime.
Hello, it's Dave, and I'm here to tell you that on Saturday nights at 7 o'clock, we talk about the fair tax on the Fair Tax Show. That Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Missouri Grassroots Radio, we explode the myths, we tell the truth, we get to the bottom of this tax code that ought to be the one to replace the IRS. Get involved in the discussion. Learn everything there is to learn. 347-677-1835, Saturday, 7 o'clock p.m., Missouri Grassroots.
They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
I don't see any method at all.
All right, we're back. We're at 647, write this down, 347-677-1835, 347-677-1835. Your time is short if you want to get in on tonight's show. Get on in there, 347-677-1835. Want to thank, once again, Missouri Grassroots Coalition. You can tune in tomorrow night and catch Cynthia Davis at Homefront. Tremendous show, tremendous host, tremendous guests every week, week after week after week of hard-hitting conservative talk. New ideas, old ideas. You want to talk about old ideas, though, catch us on Wednesday night when Lisa Payne Nager comes along with the culture vigilante. You know, there's no new ideas in the conservative culture. They're all old ideas deeply rooted in tradition and in proof that the conservative culture works. That's Lisa with another lineup of tremendous guests every Wednesday night. Then on Saturday night, I'll be back with the Fair Tax Show. I would expect our good friend Steve from the NLF will be joining us again to argue with us, to give us all of these same old lines that we told you in our very first and second show you would be hearing almost word for word. And we'll be talking with him, I'm sure, again on Saturday night. We don't care. Bring it on. In fact, it's important. It's important that you hear those things, because I've told you from day one that those are exactly the kind of arguments that you're going to face when you go out and you talk about this. You're going to face this kind of argument. You're going to face this kind of mythology. You're going to face this kind of naysaying. And it's not going to come from just illiterate people. It's going to come from people like our friend Steve, who comes along on Saturday nights and in a very literate and informed way tries to tell you that that what you want won't work. They'll build Armageddon scenarios. And you need to listen into that. You need to listen into that, because as you go out into the world to talk about the fair tax, these are the kinds of arguments that you're going to get. And you need to be ready for them. They're kind of silly. They're kind of... They really are arguments designed by those who want to maintain a system of government that exercises its power over your purse, instead of giving any of that power back to you. They're designed very much by people who want to maintain a powerful central government that manipulates everything through the methods of taxation. Remember, the fair tax is not about how much tax you pay. That's a different argument. And it's not about how much the government spends, that's a different argument. Or how it spends it, that's a different argument. It's about how tax is collected. No more, certainly no less, but no more than that. Okay, so here we are. We've got a government that's out of control, and that has the power, but not the will, to give up some of its monstrous ways. It would be easy enough for the legislature to say, okay, here's a proposed amendment. Let's send this baby out to the states and see what they say. Let's limit ourselves. Let's limit our spending. Let's limit our taxation. Let's limit our power, but it's not going to happen. And so we have this back door, front door, actually. Anything else is a back door. We have this front door method of getting our own government back under control. And there's some things that we need to do. There's some things that you need to do. There's some things that I need to do. So here we come up to the same point every night where we say that if you are not happy with the way your government's working, you have only one option. If you haven't done this, then it's because you are perfectly satisfied with the way things are going. If you don't do this, then it is only because you are perfectly satisfied with the way things are going. Because as we've said week after week, this is the only way you're ever going to get it back. It happens one state at a time. So I'm talking to my friends right now at Missouri Grassroots, in Missouri. If any of you are listening from other states, you need to be working within a movement in your state at this point to get this done. This is a long, long process, and if we're lucky And only if we're lucky, we'll get this done in time to save something for our great-grandchildren. You need to write an email to every state legislator. That's every legislator in Jefferson City. Go to senate.mo.gov. Get out a pencil. I'll wait. Go to senate.mo.gov and go to house.mo.gov. There you will find a list of all the senators and all the representatives who represent the people of Missouri in Jefferson City. When you click on the individual names, you'll be offered a chance to send them an email. Now, don't get discouraged. Do not get discouraged. You will not get an email back from any but your own senator and representative. Every representative is not obligated to answer emails from somebody that he or she doesn't represent. Every senator is the same way. They have a constituency. They have a district that they represent. Now, when you write to your representative and your senator, you damn well better get an answer. But don't expect an answer from all the others. Write just the same. It is important that every one of these legislators get 20,000 emails. One from each of you. As often as you want to do it, but at least once a month between now and January. It's going to take you some hours, probably the better part of a Saturday or Sunday afternoon. Sit down and write every one of them and say, we demand an Article 5 Amendment Convention so that Missouri becomes the first state to say it's time for an Article 5 Amendment Convention. We want one. And then it will catch on. Once Missouri does it, it will catch on. If you're listening from another state, if you're not in a movement right now to get this rolling in your state, get in one. Get in one. If you don't, it's because you're not unhappy with the way things are going. It is that simple. I mean, we've shown you week after week after week. This thing is getting worse as we speak tonight. As we speak tonight, your senators and representatives are getting together to figure out a way to come out of this thing with Obamacare intact, with another $3 trillion in debt, and with the government fully funded and increasing, and if they get their way with the caps that were put in last year taken away, the sequester undone. I mean, that's what I mean when I say it's getting worse as we sit here speaking. They're having those meetings right now. And this is the only way you can get this under control. Do it. Do it this weekend. Go online. It's senate.mo.gov and house.mo.gov and demand that's an Article 5 Amendment Convention. We'll talk to you about some more of this next week. And every week until we get it done. I mean, we are not getting off this soapbox. I don't care how many people are doing it or how many people are listening. We're going to make this happen. We're not getting off the soapbox till it's done. Tomorrow is Cynthia. Wednesday is Lisa. I'll be back on Saturday night with more talk about the fair tax. And then we'll do it some more next week. We love you all and good night.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition.
a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.